out there again. Hello, this is Dr. Gene Mesko talking to you from the Church of Science, one of our mostly hairless apes episodes. And I wanted to talk about getting owned today. You might have heard that as a phrase. She owned him, or he owned her, or him. Somebody made him, I would have said, drop your jock in a game years ago for a sports game, getting faked out on the basketball court. Writing this, recording this in April of 24, watching the basketball playoffs, did March Madness, got the NBA going, and watching players going at it in the NBA, just thoroughly enjoyable sporting competition. Because competition is one of those basic themes in evolution. In life, evolution determines life. That's what we like to talk about here at the Church of Science. And the evolution of life involves two major events of cooperation and competition. We cooperate and form bigger aggregates of life. We go from prokaryotic to eukaryotic cells, to multicellular organisms, to animals and plants with different tissues and organ systems. And then we get into populations and communities and ecosystems. And there's a scalar value to a lot of the organization. The information that's inherent in each system, embedded in their DNA, and eventually in their social systems and their civilizations, as I've talked about before. But today I wanted to talk about ownership, owning somebody or owning something. And we used to own somebody, we used to own people. That used to be an acceptable business practice over the last few millennia. It's still apparently going on the planet somewhere. That some people can own other people legally according to the government system that they live in, based on their belief systems. They think it's okay that those people can be owned, that they're inferior by some standard. And I want to say that that's a problem. That ownership today is based on I'm going to critique the capitalist system, the economy in our current civilization, and what's going on with ownership of everything. And we own the planet. We are the alpha predators. Humans have taken over the planet. And while we're the alpha predators, we have set up our civilization. We have a global civilization, so it's a really crappy one. Most people on Earth know that they are on Earth. I would bet half of them would agree that a human is a human. They might not know the word homo sapiens, or the phrase homo sapiens, but they would see people and acknowledge them as people. Because most people share that as a civilization component. There's plenty of people who look at other people and think, oh, that's not a real person, or that's less of a person, at the very least. And obviously we can rate people later. But one of the ways we rate people is based on the resources they accumulate. And then we have three different main civilization adaptations that we use. We use belief systems in order to answer questions that we don't have answers to come up with ideas about what's right and wrong, what's good and evil, what should we try to grow, what should we try to not let grow. We have economies that allow us to distribute resources within our population, however that works. And then we have governments, which makes the rules to how we're supposed to behave to each other. And obviously the government and the economy generate a lot of knowledge. They generate a lot of facts. Because once you set up the system, and you say, oh, we have a capitalist system, somebody can own something, you can own personal property, and you can trade it in a market, however the market's regulated. And that's where you start getting into variability of capitalist systems. What's available at market, and who controls the market, and who controls the cash flow. Those are all areas of active investigation and looking at capitalist systems. And governments obviously vary. We make all sorts of rules about who can vote and who's an adult and who can have sex and who can have drugs and who can have rock and roll and whatever else we want to distribute through the civilization. And the way we set up those rules is all based on our belief system, on what we think is the most important aspect of the civilization. And for the longest time, the biggest aspect of Western civilization, I'm a white guy living in America, so I'm going to talk about Western civilization. That's my most familiar system. It's my direct social ancestry. Did the DNA test thing, or my sister did it actually, this is hearsay, but she told me she got a 96% score on being Caucasian on her DNA test. And we're from first generation American parents who migrated, my grandparents immigrated, and mom and dad were born here and got married in New Jersey back in the 40s. And had six kids of their own. They had six biological kids. And if you look at the six of us, you would go, wow, genetics is pretty significant there. We do have another brother who was adopted, who unfortunately has a very different physiognomy. He's a white guy too, but different hair and eye color, skin tone. And I won't get into the emotional baggage that resulted from first generation American immigrant parents. Struggling to make a living, a World War II veteran, lived through the Depression. My parents were born in the 20s, so 100 years ago, they'd be, oh my gosh, how grumpy would my mom and dad be in their 90s? But back to ownership, what did they own? They owned a house. They had a house back in New Jersey, a Cape Cod, I believe, was the style. And it was all that. We had a built-in swimming pool, we had a swimming hole. Pretty much everybody had a car growing up when you got the chance. Some of us had beater cars, but everybody got a car. I was the first one to finish college, so fifth of seven making it through. But they did the American dream thing. We said, and that was a really cool thing. My parents did a variety of work. I could guess you say my dad took the more adventurous, big win, big long, big, no risk, no reward aspect to his life. He worked at different businesses, did different things in the economy. Mom took the tried and true traditional route, stayed with the family business that her mother ran, a clothing store, and they locked up the Catholic school kid market for uniforms. It made for a really nice, steady income flow that, and it supported a lot of variability in the family. And it was a bit of a matriarchy. I mean, Grandma Sue, Baba Sue, was a tough old broad, I believe would be the appropriate phrasing in most settings, as people would understand what I meant by that. And she was great. She was Grandma, and had holidays. It was her four siblings living within about a 10-mile radius with 25 of us in that next generation. 7 in mine, 11, 4, and 3. I believe that adds up to 25. And Cousin Pete, who I never quite got the thing on. He was technically a first cousin once removed, I think, via an aunt. So 26, if you want to count Pete. Pete got weird, though. Anyway, we'll include Pete. 26 of us going off on just growing up in New Jersey in the 60s and 70s. Yeah, most of them are still there. I lost it. I had to get away. I went off to college, got caught up in this biology stuff, and then I've been doing it for most of my adult life. And I've come up with these ideas that are these general principles that I think are really useful. So when we talk about civilization, like I said, and we've got economies and governments and belief systems, we form a civilization. And technically there's infinite civilizations, because every time you have a group of people, a group of conscious individuals who share a set of beliefs, they're a civilization. Because they will follow the rules and will work together if they have common goals, if their belief system includes setting some goals. And they'll work together and maybe survive, or maybe they won't. And that's where evolution comes in, because that's what we've been doing since we were hunter-gatherers. Heck with being a second-generation American, I'm a 250th generation human, or something like that. It's got to be more than that. I don't even know. It depends where you start. I take a date of about 50,000 years when we talk about conscious humans and evolving. So we evolved consciousness, and I base that primarily on making art. That's when we start seeing cave art and figurines of humanoid figures, you know, the Venus of Willendorf, a variety of others. And about 10,000 years ago, we started building temples. We built Göbekli Tepe, and you know, then eventually Stonehenge, and Newgrange is a neat one in Ireland. There's plenty of them, I'm sure, out there. Those are the ones I know about. You know, the Egyptians built pyramids, and that's been the whole thing. Civilizations compete. That's a basic property of evolution. Within a civilization, you cooperate. Between civilizations, you compete. That's a basic evolutionary process, because that's what's the advantage of a civilization, of any social grouping, is your strength in numbers. If a bunch of us can work together, if we can diversify our skills and specialize and come up with novel answers to problems, we're going to have an advantage. That's how you form a winning civilization. And that's what we've been trying to do for thousands of years. You know, for about 40,000 years, it was as hunter-gatherer tribes, and we wandered around the planet. And for about 10,000 years, it's been agricultural tribes. You know, it's more than tribe, building up to villages and towns and cities and nation states and empires and dynasties. And everybody wants to win. Everybody loves to win. That's competition. And so we've been competing between groups for years, and we had different governments and economies along the way. If you look at the economies of Western Europe, once again, I'll take my Western European heritage as an example. I think you'll see similar patterns no matter where you look. Now, depending on the influences of selective pressure. What is selective pressure? Selective pressure is the force in evolution that's operating against your success. It's entropy. It's the natural world causing things to break down and decay. And how well do you resist entropy? How long can you maintain order? That's the best I know about evolution. It's if you live longer, you win the game of life. If you reproduce more, you win the game of life. That's all natural selection tells us. That was Darwin's big thing. But there's the crux right there, because Chucky D, Mr. Darwin, who was a kept man, my wife makes a little more money than I do, but he married into a rich family. He married his second cousin, I believe. She was in the Wedgwood clan. If you don't know about Wedgwood, it's a really fancy China brand. And there was a big Wedgwood fortune. And Charles Darwin had married this woman. You know, they were, I don't know if it was minor royalty. There was some linkage to lords or barons or, I don't know. That's the whole thing. I mean, the aristocracy had the money. They had the ownership. So while this, what was going on at the top empire on the planet, Charles would have been active during the age, he would have been an adult under Victoria. Victorian England. Let's go back to Victorian England and think about how we got to where we are. There's all those civilizations that I was talking about, all throughout history, Egyptians, Romans, Greeks. I think we peaked as an empire with the British. I mean, they had a global empire. The phrase was, the sun never sets on the British Empire. And I don't think it, technically, I think it still doesn't. I think they still have colonies and protectorates and territories and whatever other stations you can have as an empire all over the planet. And then at some point, it's daytime somewhere on the planet because we're this marvelous spinning blue ball. So as we spin through space, passing the days, what's happened? We evolved life. Whole big history there, but for humans, we became the alpha predators. We took over the planet. We formed empires. Well, what do we have right now? We have about 200 nation states who quabble at the UN and have very few rules that we can agree on. So that's why it's a dysfunctional government. We don't have many rules that we all follow. Now, technically, we have a few, but few and far between. Most of us are still running power at the nation state level. Because there are different people who have power there. Nobody wants to give up power. I mean, that's the whole beautiful thing about human civilization. Once we set up a government based on a belief system, anybody with half a brain can look at the system and say, how can I carve out a little niche of power here? That's why bureaucracies always grow. That's why every agency that ever was built ended up putting up bureaucrats, because we all build our own social networks. because civilization is infinite. It is eternally variable because any unique set of people, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them, 1 if you're schizophrenic, set up your own social dynamic. You each are unique individuals. That's the beauty of humanity. We don't know what consciousness is. Maybe there is a God out there. I don't know. You don't know either. Nobody has any good proof. And here's my best rational argument for that. If anybody actually had a really accurate description of what a supernatural being that existed was, that you could prove they actually existed, we'd all be that religion. Because if you showed me solid proof, I think most people are reasonable enough. So it's the basis for our legal system right now, which I think is a really great evolved system. It's been changing for centuries, probably for millennia. If you go back to a variety of books, Judaic law, Abrahamic law, Egyptian law, Roman, Greek, there's traces all the way through there. And that's the beauty of evolution. You can look at those. You can use evolution as a science to piece those components together and find out where they come from. And you can then weigh the contribution to the, and that's what we do with genetics right now. That's what it means to say I'm 96% Caucasian. That there are a bunch of humans who evolved in the Caucasian mountain region on the boundary between Europe and Asia. That's why Europe and Asia are separate continents, as those mountains are significant enough that they forced people down different evolutionary paths. That was geographic selective pressure on human evolution. And so the people who stayed in the mountain region became the wheelers and dealers. That's why the people I grew up with in New Jersey, and my father would have been, my mother had to ban the phrase, "it fell off a truck." Why would that be a phrase that you would need to ban? Because my father would show up with things that he had acquired. And my mother would ask, "Where did that come from?" And he would say, "It fell off a truck. I found it on the side of the road. I don't know what happened." But the man was a scrounger. He's a scrappy guy. He made it all the way to 54. Wow. But he lived a hard life, you know. Had a Purple Heart that he refused from World War II. Had some other ribbons. Apparently got busted a few times. Wasn't much of a bad. We'll talk about that in another episode. But I wanted to talk about capitalism. We were talking about making it. Being owned was the theme of this episode. And how do we get capitalism? Well, it evolved. It's a great economic system. That's what the Cold War was about. The Cold War, I don't think, was about democracy. It always bugged me. Growing up, I grew up in the Cold War. I was born in 1960, middle of the Cold War. We won it, in 1980 or whatever. Whenever the Berlin Wall fell, we pretty much won. That was the turning point right there. I remember that. That was a huge one. That might have been 89. Anyway, at some point, the Berlin Wall came down. Russia blew up. Yeah, I think it was right around 1990. So the communists went down, but they were the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. They were socialists, according to them. That was their self-definition on the global stage, as opposed to the East Germans, who were the German Democratic Republic, and a lot of other countries dubbed communist from our capitalist Western side were countries that called themselves democracies. Now, then, in reality, they became dictatorships. I mean, I think the truth of the matter is, this is my perception of history, when Lenin and those guys actually did the revolution, when the Bolsheviks overthrew the Tsar in Russia, and the Maoists overthrew Chiang Kai-shek in China and the republic that had evolved there, they called themselves communists or socialists because they said, "We're going to share ownership." That was the big idea, was that we were going to share ownership to some extent. And that's what they wanted. And the only way to do that is to have some form of centralized government where everybody can get a decent shake. Because what they lived with was too many inequities. And that's why that attitude had evolved. When the economy does not distribute resources adequately, we rebel against the economy. That's how civilization and evolution work. We have these three adaptations. They have to complement each other. And like I said, I think the best complementarity, last time we had global complementarity, was the British Empire. We had Queen Victoria, the last 50 years of the 1800s. Victoria died in 1901, and we spent the 20th century and are still doing this job of what's next after that. Because Victoria said, oh, hey, we're going to run the planet. They controlled, literally at the peak of the British Empire, they controlled about a quarter of the territory on the planet and about a quarter of the people. And along with that, they were basically having good relations with a huge chunk of the planet. Russia was still a czar. It was another monarchy. They were part of the family. The whole thing with Western Europe was the aristocracy was all the same family. If you went around, the whole thing with World War I, go back and read your history books, it was somebody's cousin who got shot in Austria or whatever. I don't freaking know, but it was a freaking family feud. That was the issue with World War I. Great book called The Fall of Giants, if you want a dramatic fiction reading of it. If not, go back and just read the actual history books, which are usually a little drier, but have better facts. But point being, that's what happened. The countries in Europe started a war because they couldn't agree on who should be in charge, because mom had died. Fucking Victoria passed away in 1901. By 1914, we had a shooting war with lots of in stuff in between and while and during as well. It wasn't perfect, but I'm just going back by the data. Data says the UK, the United Kingdom, was the biggest empire on the planet ever. And what did we get from that? Well, how did they do it? Well, they had a belief system that was basically Christianity. You can go back and look at their version of Christianity from the whole Protestant work ethic thing. Obviously, you had still Christians and Baptists and Catholics and all this other stuff. That's the whole Irish, Northern Ireland, Southern Ireland thing. But you go into that Christianity and the Protestant work ethic was a real thing. Because what did they do? They integrated religion with the economy. They said, oh, everybody should work. Capitalism is wonderful. Why? Because they see how rich you can get. Because near the end of Victoria's reign, in the 1890s, you would have had the Gilded Age. The Gilded Age is when these industrialists had hit the peak after the Industrial Revolution, which came after the Scientific Revolution. And in the middle of that, Darwin had stepped up and said, hey, I've got a mechanism for all of this biological life on Earth. And you know what? Maybe there's no God. That's where Darwin really screwed the pooch for England. Because part of holding on to empire at that level, at that time, involved having a religious belief system, having a god that you could reference as an all-powerful deity. And that's a really useful tool. It bugged me for years about trying to figure this process out. You needed a belief system, but what if your belief system is zero? If there's no god? Because everybody else had said, no, there's the only one true God. And there's been plenty of wars about that. We're still fighting the freaking Muslims about who's the real, the one true God. That's part of the conflict in the Middle East. Goddamn Christians and Muslims killing each other. And that's been going on since the Crusades. That's a freaking 1,000-year battle. And we're still fighting it over. Because nobody can prove that their invisible God is better. And Darwin came along and said, well, what if there's no God? And here's how it could happen. And that's what he threw out there. And for 150 years, we've been looking at it as biologists. And we said, you know, he was fucking right. It's nothing but chemistry and physics. And maybe we'll concede the possibility, logically. And this is what we do in the Church of Science. We logically concede that there might be a God, but nobody can prove it. So why don't we build our civilization off of that? And when you do that, instead of having what we have right now with the capital ship that's ownership, what if we did a mutation? What if we altered our civilization? And we said, no, we're not going to allow for religious input to government. We're going to assume there's no God. We're going to assume we're acting on our own. We're going to be adults. We are going to be the fucking adults in the room. And we're going to step up and say, I really like to believe in a God. I really think Jesus or Allah or Buddha or whoever is real. but I can't prove it, but I want you to believe it too. And we're just going to take those people by the hand and lead them over to the buffet table and get them a juice box and a cheese stick. And we're going to say, all right, when you have some real information to contribute, when you have some data, something that you have evidence for, you can come back and talk to the adults. And that's how we need to treat religion now, I think. And if we did that, then we could look at the economy and say, what's the best way to distribute resources? Then we can do something I like to call capitalist democracy, where we say every competent adult is a voting member. I'll talk about how to arrange that on the next episode. And for right now, I would say for the economy, what we have to do is open up all the books and say, who owns what? And we start skimming at the top 1%. We start taking money from the top 1%, and we go and we give it to the poorest people on the planet. And we keep doing that. We keep redistributing that economy until everybody on Earth has what we decide is an acceptable minimum level. I personally would decide an effective medium level is where I am, obviously. I'm pretty comfortable. I live in a house that I pay a mortgage on. I might pay it off before I die. Maybe not. Depends how healthy I stay at this age. But my wife and I run a surplus economy in the sense that we bring in more than we spend every month between servicing our debt like the mortgage and paying for utilities and buying groceries. We occasionally get to travel. And we'd like to do it a little more. And it's not just economic issues that affect that. But most of them are economic, because we pretty much do what we want, or we've adapted to at least having some options. And I think that's what life should be for everybody. We're both educated. We raised four kids to adulthood, and they're all doing their own lives. And it's been a pretty good life. And that's what I'm trying to share, because I got here by saying, maybe there's not a God. And maybe I can use this redistributive economics. I use government loans. I'm a freaking drone of the state. And the state has provided a really good life for me because I provided a functional skill. I was able to teach people biology, and I was able to do a little research, which is a gamble. If you want to be edgy with science, then be a researcher. That's where the excitement is. That's the fun stuff. But it's hard because you're competing. That's the major leagues. That's like going to say, I want to be an athlete, and saying, you know, you want to get to the show. And I could play ball in the backyard. But, you know, taking a Justin Verlander on 95-mile-an-hour fastball and doing something with it, turning it around, that's a totally separate issue. And in my peak, I don't think I could have done that, much less at 64. But for science, the big show is the research game. There's money out there the government has said, that people have voted for, and said, hey, we have a problem. Can we fix it? I don't know, let's give some money to researchers. Let's look at drug addiction, let's look at aging, let's look at cancer. And people are researching that, and they compete for grants. And you make it to the show by being the smartest guy in the room. And you figure out how to work your budget, how to ask the right questions, how to get the right equipment, and you answer questions, you solve problems. That's what fucking science does, and it's awesome. And the other end of the spectrum, art. We have artists who create beauty. And then everybody in between. And then we have freaking managers. We have people who just do maintenance, which is not a trivial thing. But I think we should rearrange the economy a little bit. We should make sure everybody gets a share and gets a shot. Because diversity is a win for everybody. From the perspective of evolution, having more options and more specializations is better than having fewer. And we've got freaking 8 billion people on the planet. And we're fighting over shit that's mostly about ownership. If we opened up all the books on the planet and said, what's wrong with this social civilization situation right here, here and now, at any given scale, I would wager, more often than not, the issue is going to be about money. Who's got the money to pay for this? Who's got the money to fix this? Who's got the money to add this thing that we really need? Because everybody else has it. And it might be jealousy, sure. If I know about Western America, or the Western civilizations, the industrial weird world, if you're familiar with that acronym, there's a really cool life there. I love sleeping indoors and, you know, with HVAC systems and grocery stores and cable television and the internet and freaking public sanitation and clean water. That is all very cool, and a huge number of people on the planet don't have it. Why not? Because some people have more and other people have less. And you could tell me it's democracy, and you could tell me it's, oh, it's the best way to do things, and I would say, go fuck yourself. Go fuck yourself right with whatever's an appropriate device. Because I'm just tired of it. I'm just so fucking tired of it. It's you know, every problem has issues, and some of them are belief, and I've already said, well, what if we can just be adults and say, no, I don't believe in anything? Well, what about government? How are we going to make the rules about this? Well, we're all going to vote on it. We all agree on. And this is what I think we should all agree on. The rule we should agree on. This would be in the first few rules. I would enact as king or as chairman of the Executive Council of the United States of Earth. However we decide to form a government. Somebody ought to step up, and I'm trying to do my part, and say, skim the top 1%. Give it to the bottom 1%. Let's fix their problems, and let's keep doing that until we get a relatively balanced economy, because that's the whole thing. I think the economy right now is not balanced. It's not fair. How do we do that? Well, we skim off the top, we give it to the bottom, and then at some point we'll hit a medium that everybody will be able to go, hey, because what'll happen? The medium will be happy when there's less stress. Why is there stress? There's stress because we're all responding to challenges, to problems that we can't solve. That's all stress is. Stress is the biological reaction that starts with the fight or flight response, the panic and fear that helps an animal survive. And we say, oh, that's a problem. What can I do about it? Well, I can secrete some adrenaline and some cortisol, and I can have a stress response, and I can run away, or I can fight, or I can stop and think. That's where intellect comes in. That's civilization. That's consciousness. That's part of consciousness. As soon as you start considering options, you're moving towards consciousness. When you become self-aware and you achieve theory of mind, when you realize there are other people who are self-aware as well, then you're conscious and you can start doing things. And now we can start solving problems. And that's what we should do. And I think the biggest problem is the economy. And so, yes, it needs to get a little less capitalist and a little more socialist. And that would minimize stress on everybody, which would minimize tensions. And maybe we'd stop blowing each other up and shooting each other. Maybe. This is Dr. Gene Mesko signing off from the Church of Science.